The headlines: the UN Security Council stresses the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after an Israeli minister visited the site in occupied Al-Quds. Russia accuses the US of lacking any desire for a political solution to the Ukraine war after Washington downplayed Moscow's truce offer. And the US House of Representatives fail again to elect a speaker as Republicans remain divided on Kevin McCarthy's bid. Welcome. Our top story: the UN Security Council has voiced concern over the status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after a far-right Israeli minister visited the site in occupied Al-Quds earlier this week.
On 3rd January, Israel's new Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, conducted a visit accompanied by heavy security detail to the holy site in Jerusalem. The visit was the first to the site by an Israeli minister since 2017. While the visit was not accompanied or followed by violence, it is seen as particularly inflammatory given Mr. Ben-Gvir's past advocacy for changes to the status quo.
Security Council members reaffirmed the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They met on Thursday as anger boils among Palestinians over the Israeli minister's visit. They see such visits as provocations aimed at turning the mosque into a Jewish temple. And that's because the decades-old status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound allows only Muslims to worship there. Palestinians want the Security Council to take action.
What red line does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? When are you going to act? It has displayed utter disregard for the sanctity of Palestinian life, the sanctity of international law, and the sanctity of Al-Haram al-Sharif. It does so with absolute contempt.
The Palestinian envoy also said Israel's actions have nothing to do with religious freedom and aim to change the identity of Al-Aqsa. Israel's envoy to the UN was also present at the Security Council meeting. Gilad Erdan defended the minister's visit to Al-Aqsa, saying it was in line with the status quo. The US, meanwhile, voiced concern over unilateral acts that increase tensions. The Israeli minister's visit sparked anger from other countries, including Muslim nations as well. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest place in Islam. Meanwhile, Iran has warned against Al-Aqsa Mosque violations by Israeli officials and settlers, saying such moves will have serious consequences for the fake Tel Aviv regime. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with the Secretary General of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, Hussein Brahim Taha. Iran's top diplomat called for the establishment of a legal international mechanism to stop sacrilegious acts against sacred places and religious sanctities. The OIC chief, for his part, strongly condemned the latest violations of Al-Aqsa Mosque by a right-wing Israeli minister. He said such provocations by Zionists undermine peace and stability in West Asia. Mona Kandil in Ramallah says Al-Aqsa has been at the center of tensions in Palestine in recent years, and any attempt to change the mosque's status quo will explode those tensions.
Palestinians are afraid that condemning, slamming the visit is not enough. What the Palestinians want is action. They want more strict action from the United Nations Security Council. Otherwise, than other Israeli far-right-wing ministers or even any other Israeli official would be raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex with dozens of Israeli settlers, and nothing would go on. Let's say any infringement of the decades long status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Al-Quds definitely would lead to an explosion in the region, not just inside the Palestinian territories, because in the last few years, the main reason for an explosion, or one of the main reasons of the explosion in the region, had been the raids and storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, desecrating it. There could be visits by non-Muslims to tour the area, but not to enter the mosques there, not to perform any rituals or pray. The Israeli settlers want to feel free to enter whenever they want and perform their rituals and to pray there, desecrate the holy site. That has been causing more anger among the Palestinians here.
The first international conference on Marta Soleimani's school of thought has wrapped up in the Iranian capital, Tehran, organized in honor of the assassinated general. The two-day conference shed light on different aspects of his lifestyle and philosophy. Gisu Misha Ahmadi has more.
Veteran Iranian politicians were present alongside foreign activists, scholars, and researchers on the second and final day of the first international conference on Martyr Soleimani's school of thought. Panel discussions shed light on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's life and legacy.
You have to live with people like Martyr Soleimani to understand why they chose that certain lifestyle. Not only that, but even more important is how they choose to die. This makes people like Martyr Soleimani stand out.
According to the participants of the conference, Martyr Soleimani had a deep understanding of politics and based his views on the guidelines of the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. They say this is the most important reason why he should always be remembered.
It is our national duty to keep the memory of Martyr Soleimani alive. He is a role model for future generations, and we need to elaborate on his school of thought for the next generation to walk down the same path.
My husband is in prison in our country, the Republic of Azerbaijan, since 2011, when he was sentenced to 12 years in prison for protesting against the ban on hijab. He was inspired by Martyr Soleimani. It is very important to introduce Martyr Soleimani to the world and the younger generation.
The plight of the Palestinians was another topic high on the agenda.
This conference is of great importance because one of the major goals of Martyr Soleimani was to liberate Palestine, and this is also one of the major issues that was pointed out in the panel discussion. It has also been mentioned in the final statement of the conference.
Eight panels separately focused on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's school of thought, from his personal life to his teachings and great leadership skills. However, his views regarding international politics received more attention.
I think we can highlight three points. One deals with the role that General Soleimani had in stopping U.S. hegemonic designs for the Middle East. The second point was his ability to organize people, create networks of like-minded people. He was a religious man, he was an ethical man, he was someone that attracted people, and that was one of the reasons that he was successful.
While the organizers of the conference have decided to set up a permanent secretariat, they say they are open to receiving more research papers, projects, and books for the next conference, which will be focusing more on the legacy of a man who is known for making great efforts in eradicating insecurity in the region. Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani fought for peace, security, and stability in the region. According to the participants of this conference, his greatest legacy and achievement was eliminating Daesh terrorists. Gisu Misha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Turning elsewhere now, Russia has lashed out at the United States over its reaction to a 36-hour truce President Vladimir Putin proposed in Ukraine. U.S. President Joe Biden accused Putin of trying to find some oxygen by ordering the truce from midday on Friday. And that drew criticism from the Russian ambassador to Washington. Anatoly Antonov said Biden's comment means that the U.S. is set on fighting with Russia to the last Ukrainian. The comment, he added, also shows the fate of the Ukrainian people doesn't worry the U.S. at all. Inside Ukraine, the government has also rejected the truce offer. Kiev says there will be no ceasefire until Russian forces withdraw from land they've taken. It also says the offer is a trick to halt the progress of Ukrainian forces in the eastern Donbass region seized by Russia. Earlier researcher Greg Simmons said Russia's, quote, military diplomacy aims to persuade Ukraine into negotiations. So let's take a quick listen to that.
I think this is what you would call, euphemistically, military diplomacy. So what he is signalling at this point in time, because if you take that with what else he has been saying, that he's open to dialogue about peace on certain terms, this is a form of negotiation to encourage Ukraine to come to peace. But of course, Ukraine is not the one who has the call to make whether to come to peace or not. It's the US which is controlling Ukraine. Although I think that Putin is very well aware of that situation. But this is a form of negotiation in an armed conflict. Zelensky should actually study history and find out what happens to US client states. I mean, it's happened time and time again. As soon as the client state runs out of use, it's cut off. And it will come a point when he's cut off and left to his own devices.
Moving on to the United States now, where the House of Representatives failed for the third time to elect a speaker.
No member elect, having received a majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
The stalemate comes as House Republicans remain divided on Kevin McCarthy's bid. He's the Republican leader at the lower chamber of the U.S. Congress. A group of 20 hardline Republicans are refusing to give him the 218 votes necessary to win the post. They say they don't trust McCarthy to fight for the restrictions they want to impose on President Joe Biden and the Democratic-held Senate. McCarthy has offered concessions to his opponents. To get their votes, the House will now meet again later on Friday to elect a speaker. The stalemate has caused the dysfunction unseen at the House since 1860.
In November 2022, the Republican Party won the majority of votes to the House of Representatives. They vowed to go after Democrats and President Joe Biden, but now cracks have appeared with the party itself. In a historic incident, the GOP failed to nominate the House Speaker. Party leader Kevin McCarthy got just 203 votes in two rounds, less even than Democrat Hakeem Jeffries in the GOP-controlled chamber, and fared even worse, with 202 votes in round three. It went to six rounds, but yet McCarthy could not gain the votes. It was a tumultuous start to the new Congress, and pointed to a difficult road ahead with Republicans now in control of the House. A new generation of conservative Republicans, many aligned with Donald Trump's Make America Great Again agenda, want to upend business as usual in Washington, and were committed to stopping McCarthy's rise without concessions to their priorities. It is widely believed that a revolt of ultra-hardliners has dealt a humiliation to McCarthy.
Those of us who will not be voting for Kevin McCarthy today take no joy in this discomfort that this moment has brought. But if you want to drain the swamp, you cannot put the biggest alligator in charge of the exercise.
McCarthy became the first candidate to fall short in a first ballot for speaker in a century. The impasse means Republicans are unable even to assume the control that they won in the midterms, as a new House can't yet be sworn in. The standoff over McCarthy has been building since Republicans appeared on track to win the House majority in the midterm elections in November. A new generation of Trump-aligned Republicans led the opposition to McCarthy, believing that he's neither conservative enough nor tough enough to battle Democrats.
And they even came to the position where one, Matt Gaetz, said, I don't care if we go to plurality and we elect Hakeem Jeffries and it hurts the new frontline members not to get reelected. Well, that's not about America. And I will always fight to put the American people first, not a few individuals that want something for themselves. So we may have a battle on the floor, but the battle is for the conference and the country. And that's fine with me.
While the standoff risks paralyzing the House and force the lawmakers to consider another candidate, Republicans flipped the House in their favor with a narrow majority in the 2020 midterm elections. But there are now concerns that the fractures could deal a severe blow to the GOP in Congress and the next presidential election.
While the Senate remains in Democratic hands, House Republicans are eager to confront Biden after 2 years of the Democrats controlling both houses of Congress. But disagreements to choose the House Speaker is an ominous sign for the party and its conservative agenda. Even if McCarthy succeeds to be the Speaker, he will be a weak figure who may be in office but barely in power. The war, which started with the Tea Party backlash to the Obama administration, is far from over.
We will compromise, but we will not capitulate. And there's a very serious difference. There's 222 Republicans in our conference now. So if 20 people are able to drive this train however they want to, 202 of us might as well go home, because that means they are the conference. That means they those 20 people will be the majority. Well, that is capitulation, and we will not do that. Compromise, yes.
The fractious support for McCarthy is over the direction of the GOP between swing and district moderates and conservatives who have taken up the populist agenda of the former President Donald Trump. It is now believed that the chaos highlights the dilemma facing House Republicans. Analysts say no matter the concessions made to some of those on the far right, they simply will not relent and join other Republicans.
That wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Chair defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
After the disintegration of the Soviet Union, Western countries under the leadership of the U.S. placed the re-engineering of West Asia at the top of their agenda in order to ensure the safety of the Zionist regime and protect their ulterior motives. One aspect of this project was to reshape geographical borders by disintegrating Islamic countries. Accordingly, the multifaceted project to create terrorist and Takfiri groups such as Al-Qaeda and Daesh was carried out with the assistance of Saudi Arabia and the Zionist regime, just to name a few of cohorts. As part of this plan, the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003. But by 2007, the Bush administration concluded that their approach was failing and decided to deploy an additional 30,000 troops to Iraq. During the troops surge operation, General David Petraeus, who commanded U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, received a letter saying, "General Petraeus, you should know and consider the fact that I, Qasem Soleimani, control the policy for Iran when it comes to Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, and Afghanistan." The role General Qasem Soleimani played in those countries and beyond before his assassination by Trump orders was to bring honor, pride, dignity, sovereignty, and freedom back to the people. In Iraq and Syria, he spearheaded the fight against the most brutal, lethal, and sophisticated of terrorist groups to date, Daesh and Nusra Front, among others.
Tech Fury groups that people in Iraq and Syria accuse America of creating, arming, and supporting, and some kingdoms in the Persian Gulf of funding with billions of dollars. To take a closer look at the third anniversary of U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, the legend, please join us on this edition of Iran Today. In response to regional threats, General Soleimani developed the regional security theory due to his unique understanding of the Western politics and with the purpose of preventing their plot from being fulfilled. On the basis of this theory, it is understood that the security of West Asian Islamic countries is interconnected and influences one another. In other words, any threat to Syria would undermine Iraq's security, and insecurity in Iraq would jeopardize Iranian security, etc.
What distinguishes General Soleimani from others is that he had the power to bring about such a change and revolution in one person that he or she shows a completely new personality. He has the ability of creating new individuals. He has the power of organizing a system. General Soleimani enjoys all the behavioral characteristics of a top leader. The difference between a leader and a manager is that a manager may only focus on the area of his or her responsibilities, while a leader is never limited to one area. General Soleimani could see far horizons of the region. He had the foresight and the ability to see facts and realities that ordinary people may not be able to understand.
So to ensure the West Asian security and counteract Westerners' plots, General Soleimani developed the resistance model and molded the fight against extremism and terrorism on the basis of developing the resistance strategy. In fact, Haj Qasem preempted the Westerners' plans. They were trying to create discord among the Muslims, but General Soleimani united Muslim nations under the basis of resistance. Haj Qasem's miracle was that he placed seven nationalities: the Syrians, Lebanese, the Iranians, Pakistanis, Afghans, and Iraqis under the umbrella of resistance.
General Soleimani was the embodiment of kindness and courage. That is, he had everything. Usually when people have a good characteristic, they can only be successful in that direction. But in the case of Haj Qasem, it should be noted that he had all the good characteristics that are usually seen in a religious person. I had many meetings with him, and I remember that in my first visit, I expected to see a rough political, military figure. Well, he was a soldier. You can't expect otherwise. But I was wrong. The gentleness of his soul attracted me, and I was really fascinated by him.
He shaped this resistance bloc by preserving the native identity and culture of every nation, and by not imposing Iranian culture on them. Hezbollah was created with the Lebanese identity, Hashd al-Shaabi with the Iraqi personality, and the Zainabiyun, Fatimiyun, and Haydariyun forces with their own respective national and local characters, and then all of them took advantage of the resulting synergy. For this reason, today, no factor can eliminate these forces, and their power of influence will grow constantly and sustainably.
All the countries of the world are formed and established on the basis of the Western nation-state model. Unlike other countries, the Islamic Republic of Iran was formed on two foundations due to its Islamic nature. One is the same nation-state, and the other is the Ummah state. When it comes to Ummah, borders are disregarded, and nations of several states come under the umbrella of one Ummah, that is the Islamic Ummah. The most important organization that was formed based on this idea is the Quds Army. The Quds Force has no mission inside Iran, but its mission is outside the borders to help the Islamic Ummah. That is why we see the presence of the Quds forces in Lebanon in resistance against the occupation of the Zionist regime. We see it helping Bosnia Muslims against the Srebrenica massacre. We see it helping Syria against Takfiri groups. Now, General Soleimani was the head of this Quds force. In my opinion, he was very successful in carrying out this mission. in defining it and identifying the scope of this mission.
Haj Qasem's goal was to defend Sunni, Shia, Palestinian, Lebanese, Yemeni, Yazidi, Christian, and all the regional people in the Abrahamic religions. So his vision was how to liberate the region and remove the enemy from West Asia. Indeed, he wasn't just an individual, but a doctrine. And this doctrine cannot be destroyed by terror or missiles. The doctrine stays, the doctrine goes on. And Iranians, along with the other folks in the region, will open a new chapter, with many eager to continue Commander Soleimani's legacy.
You see our military and defensive strength today. America is worried about Iran's military growth. Global arrogance, with all its arsenals and weapons and its military advances, still expresses concern. This was while we didn't even have barbed wire at the beginning of the Iraq-Iran war, and no country in the world helped us. Today, we send satellites into the space. We send living creatures into the space. With regard to the growth of science to this day, we have made unprecedented progress. It is not fair to ignore all these positive aspects of Iran. In any case, today we have economic problems. It cannot be denied, but you should also see the progress.
The U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani was a major, dangerous, and unexpected escalation in antagonism between Washington and Tehran. Haj Qasem was perceived by many to be untouchable due to his prominence in Iran and beyond. No one is certain what the short or long-term consequences of his martyrdom will be, except that it will stimulate a soul-deep desire among his many followers to avenge his death.
General Soleimani was one of the greatest legends in terms of establishing security in the region. He was the one who defeated Daesh in Syria and Takfiri terrorist movements in Iraq. The same holds true about in Lebanon. If it wasn't for General Soleimani, I think the region would have been insecure for several decades. The West announced that it created Daesh by its own hands, and it reassured that destroying Daesh would take at least 3 to 4 decades. But the presence and efforts of General Soleimani changed everything, as this plague was wiped off the face of the earth much sooner. Today, you can only see a few traces of this terrorist group in the region.
Haj Qasem was assassinated by a U.S. airstrike ordered by former U.S. President Donald Trump at Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Soleimani and Iraqi military officials were leaving Baghdad Airport in two cars when they were hit by a U.S. drone strike near a cargo area. The commander had flown in from Syria on an official trip. Several missiles struck the convoy and at least 7 people died in the incident. Iraqi militia leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis was among those killed. Iran's foreign minister at the time, Javad Zarif, called the attack an act of international terrorism, tweeting that the U.S. bears responsibility for all consequences of its rogue adventurism. On January 8, 2020, in a military operation codenamed Operation Martyr Soleimani, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps launched over 12 ballistic missiles at the Ain al-Assad airbase in western Iraq, as well as another airbase in Erbil in response to the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani by a United States drone strike 5 days earlier. The strike was the largest ballistic missile attack ever against American forces. Initially, the U.S. was not willing to concede the seriousness of the attack. While some U.S. officials assessed that none of its service members were injured or killed, the U.S. Department of Defense ultimately said that 110 service members had been diagnosed and treated for traumatic brain injuries from the attack.
A few months before the martyrdom of General Soleimani, we read in several articles that he was considered one of the world's top military security theorists. Indeed, in the 33-day war in Lebanon, his presence made the occupying regime of Israel to feel and experience the bitter taste of defeat for the first time. Also, in the Gaza 22-day war, the world was witness to the key role of Qasem Soleimani. Later, we saw that the number of days that Israel dared to attack decreased to 11 days and then to a week and even less. You don't have to be a military analyst to understand that there is not balance of power between Hezbollah and Israel, but despite the fact that the Zionist regime of Israel was armed to the teeth but General Soleimani's military genius and experience changed the outcome of the wars. He managed to overcome the enemy despite all the support it received from the U.S. government.
General Soleimani's assassinations plots the prompt and effective action of the armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran reportedly upset the geopolitical equations to the point that it brought about the definite failure of U.S. regional strategy. The U.S. fleeing from Afghanistan, the beginning of the process of withdrawal from Iraq, and the change in the strategy of the U.S. military presence in the geostrategic region of Persian Gulf is indicative of such impacts and consequences. Undoubtedly, the criminal act of the United States in martyring General Soleimani is a clear manifestation of a terrorist attack that was orchestrated and carried out in an organized manner by the then U.S. government, for which the current Biden administration in the White House is also responsible.
First of all, General Soleimani had special characteristics. He helped both in creating the resistance movement and also cultivated an intimate relationship with its leaders. In terms of the aspects of the plan devised by him, they succeeded in creating a movement that brought a lot of credit for the Islamic Republic of Iran regarding its international relations and the sphere of its influence. His military genius, his personal relationships, and the type of organization he created in the region are perhaps the three greatest characteristics of Martyr Soleimani.
The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Islamic Republic has adopted a number of measures from the time of the assassination based on legal principles of combating the impunity of criminals to hold such individuals and entities accountable before the courts, and will continue on this path until the final result is achieved. To fight impunity means that international and national criminal law establishes that certain crimes are not subject to any statute of limitations, ensuring that the most severe crimes do not go unpunished.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Here's how it looks on the page. People's Dispatch says lawsuit filed in Iraq against Trump aids for assassination of Qasem Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Soleimani and Muhandis were key figures in the fight against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. They were assassinated in a drone attack on January 3, 2020, ordered by former U.S. President Donald Trump. Almost 2 years after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad, at least 78 Iraqis filed a lawsuit in an Iraqi court on Sunday, November 27, against then-U.S. President Donald Trump and other officials of his administration. The plaintiffs demanded legal action against the accused, including Trump and his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, among others, in their petition filed at Baghdad's Federal Court of Appeal. The plaintiffs include the brother of Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, Muhammad Hassan Jafar al-Muhandis. Both Soleimani and Muhandis were celebrated in Iraq and Iran for playing key roles in fighting against the Islamic State ISIS and reversing its advances. Prior to its defeat, ISIS had taken control over a large part of Iraq and Syria. The assassinations invited a strong reaction from Iran and mass protests in both Iran and Iraq. Within a couple of days, the Iraqi parliament adopted a resolution asking the government to ensure that all foreign troops leave the country. In April this year, U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price admitted that the intensity and frequency of attacks on foreign troops in Iraq increased following the U.S. assassination of Soleimani and Muhandis. He noted that between 2018 and 2020, attacks on U.S. forces increased by 400%. The cradle reads, former Iraqi prime minister under U.S. protection faces arrest for Soleimani assassination. Iraqi lawmakers are considering arresting former Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kazemi for his alleged role in the assassination of Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. in 2020. During an interview with Iraqi news outlet Shafaq News on 12 December, a senior official in the State of Law Coalition, Fazel al-Zarghawi, revealed lawmakers are mulling over the decision. He also claimed al-Kazemi is being sheltered inside the U.S. embassy. The available information confirms that al-Kazemi is in the capital, Baghdad, and has not left the country. He's inside the Green Zone and is sheltering in the American embassy, Zarghawi said on Monday. He then added, the next stage will witness the issuance of arrest warrants and investigations against al-Kazemi for his involvement in the theft of the century case and the assassination of Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and Qasem Soleimani. Sardar Soleimani was a strong threat of unity and adherence to the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, independence, and Iranian identity. He believed in the ideals of Imam Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Republic. Imam believed in a neither east nor west policy for the country. He considered the country's progress to be the result of independence from the foreign powers.
It is possible that a lot of our wealth and facilities have been spent for curbing the conspiracies against the country. If this money had been spent on the welfare and comfort of the nation, the situation would have been much better, undoubtedly. Just look at the costs imposed by some deviant and anti-Iran groups on the government of Iran. Well, I have been in Kurdistan and seen these groups are provoked and take actions against Iran, which literally waste the energy of the government. Don't forget the costs of the war imposed by Iraq also. If these had not happened, if the sanctions were not in place after all the negotiations, then we would have definitely seen progress in Iran. Of course, despite all the hardships, restrictions, and sanctions, the progress brought by the Islamic Republic is not seen in the history of this country. Of course, despite all the hardships and restrictions and sanctions, the progress brought by the Islamic Republic in Iran is not seen in the history of this country.
The revolution of Iran was completely a popular movement through which the Imam revived Islam in the country. It was founded on the Islamic values such as supporting the oppressed and treating the rich and the poor, the rural and the urban and others with the same eye.
Whether the ideals of the 1979 Islamic Revolution have been realized or not, in my opinion, this question is not easy to answer. These ideals consist of a wide range of demands, which can be summarized in a short, comprehensive phrase, and that is social justice. If we want to go more into details, ideals such as prosperity, freedom, independence, self-confidence, self-belief, and equality are the prominent ones which I can safely assume that have been realized. To sum it up, we need to be fair in our judgment on the performance of the Islamic government of Iran. We have gained the principle of social justice to a great extent. Although there is still a long way ahead of us, but the pivotal point here is that the government has long started treading on this path and it will accomplish this responsibility.
One of the main ideals of the Islamic Republic has always been to help the subjugated countries in the region and support the revolutionary cause in other parts of the world. Accordingly, the issue of Palestine and its importance in the Islamic world was first proposed by Imam Khomeini and then presented to the complex world of politics. General Qasem Soleimani, who understood its importance from the time he understood the Khomeini movement, never let it out of sight and accepted it as a defined ideology. He always stood by the side of Palestinians in various forms, including in ideology and solidarity, and also in providing them with equipment.
Contrary to what many people think, the Quds Force is not just a military organization. Its activities cover military, cultural, and political areas, and diplomatic relations are both part of its principles. General Soleimani was successful in many cases without firing a single shot. This goes back to the deterrent power it created and many other issues. So yes, he was a diplomat, a soldier, and a politician.
Haj Qasem Soleimani sought to elevate the Islamic Revolution and considered Iran as a sanctuary. He regarded Iran to be like a holy shrine, that if it falls in harm's way, many other holy shrines will be harmed consequently. He was both a national hero and a hero to the Islamic Ummah and will remain that way.
He has become a role model for free-thinking people until eternity.
I believe that Mr. Soleimani was the architect of resistance. Imam Khomeini was the architect of the Islamic Revolution, and Ayatollah Khamenei is the second architect of the revolution, but here Mr. Soleimani was the architect of the resistance movement. In other words, he created a mechanism that works for everyone, despite all differences they may have in religious and political areas. His followers come from various and sometimes contradictory religious and political backgrounds, but General Soleimani managed to organize and mobilize all of them for a common goal.
General Soleimani's funeral processions in the capital city of Tehran came days after hundreds of thousands of mourners accompanied the coffin carrying his remains in the cities of Qadhim, Najaf, Karbala in Iraq, and Ahvaz and Mashhad in Iran. The multi-city ceremony continued after Tehran, with Martyr Soleimani's remains going to the holy city of Qom before his burial ceremony was held in his hometown of Kerman.
God willing, the roots of the global arrogance that is the U.S. government will be removed from this region soon. The world was witness to the martyrdom of General Soleimani and the fact that the U.S. government cowardly assassinated him by a drone. It was very sad. The country, which pretends to be an advocate of the fight against terrorism, killed the man who was at the forefront of the fight against terrorism. In fact, one of the reasons that General Soleimani was on the right path and was a good person is that he was assassinated by the most evil and satanic government on earth. His funeral is another proof that documents disclaim. The unique and wide attendance of people at his funeral was unparalleled. We can only compare it to Imam Khomeini's funeral, the founder of the Islamic Revolution of 1979. General Soleimani's funeral, however, was not limited to Tehran or even Iran only. People of Iraq paid their respect to his body in their own country. His body was also transferred to several Iranian provinces, such as Khuzestan, Mashhad, and Kerman.
Various Iranian and international leaders joined the massive crowds in the funeral processions of the legendary commander, held in many other places across the world.
After the funeral of General Soleimani, one of Iraq's high-ranking officials told me that he was shocked and amazed to see the large presence of Iraqi people and their respect for an Iranian commander. The then president of Iraq, Mr. Barham Saleh, also admitted that he was really shocked and surprised by the funeral and the warm and glorious welcome of the Iraqi people to General Soleimani and Iran. This shows the support of the Iraqi nation for the Iranian government and people.
But in Tehran, in freezing early morning temperatures, women dressed in black walked alongside men holding up flags bearing the names of Shia imams as they walked down Revolution Street in capital towards the Tehran University. A several million strong turnout have poured onto the streets of the city to pay respects to Qasem Soleimani, the country's most powerful, beloved military commander. Iranians appeared saddened and very angry at the way he was killed. They felt that this was a very unjust act the way it was carried out. Iran's local media reported that the streets of the capital were so full of mourners that many were unable to emerge from underground metro stations. Addressing the huge crowd, Haj Qasem's daughter, Zainab, said the U.S. and its ally, Israel, faced a dark day for her father's assassination. "Crazy Trump, don't you think that everything is over with my father's martyrdom?" she said, referring to the former U.S. president. The families of U.S. soldiers in the Middle East will spend their days waiting for the death of their children, she said to Cheers. Brigadier General Ismail Qaani, General Soleimani's successor, also reminded the crowd that the only compensation for us would be to remove America from the region. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Do tune in same time next week and each week after. Bye for now. ربنا
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the exalted.
A path,
to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of As-Sahif al-Sajjadiyya for Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Zainul Abidin. And we go to the part where the Imam Salamullah alayhi says to Allah, I seek refuge in you from wata'atul kulfa, and taking something that will cause me problems or hardship. So we said one of the meanings of hardship is in terms of ourselves doing something that we should not be doing in general. And said we also said that we should not get ourselves involved in other people's businesses, because this is also can be considered to be also problematic, because obviously it is, beside the fact that it could be leading to sin, and you know, we can cause ourselves to be in a harm's way. And we mentioned a few things that happen to us when we are involved in other people's business. Other thing that it means, it means that we should not put more effort and more problems on someone else. One of the duties of a Muslim upon his other Muslims is to come to his aid, is to help him whenever he wants. But having said that, sometimes we put too much responsibilities and duties on someone that actually cannot comprehend. So we said taklufatul ikhwan, or the hadith says sharrul ikhwani ma tukallifa lah. The worst of brothers is he who you have to put an effort to please. So that's something we should not do. Before we continue, let us take a short break and then we come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we were saying that when it comes to our brothers, at the same time that we have to do a lot of things for them, but we have to be very careful that we should not burden people with our, you know, things that they don't like. Okay? So sometimes I come with a friend, a brother of mine, and there are things he can carry, things he cannot handle, but sometimes I burden him with something that he can't. For example, there are people who can't take a joke, for example. I know this friend of mine, this brother of mine, he has a tolerance to certain things. Sometimes I come and I try to joke with him. I try to, some people even don't like to be touched. I hit them physically, or, you know, in a form of joking as well. And sometimes we put ourselves in a position where we're putting so much on our brothers that they cannot handle. That also could be one of the meanings in this hadith that says, don't put taklufa on your brothers and your sisters. So for example, we have a hadith that says, لا يحتشم من أخيه, when it comes to the mu'min, you know, with him and his brother are cool. وَلَا يَدْرَ أَيُّهُمَا أَعْجَبَ الَّذِي يُكَلِّفُ أَخَاهُ إِذْ دَخَلَ يَتَكَلَّفَ لَهُ أَوْ يَتَكَلَّفَ لِأَخِيهِ. The hadith says, and he's not sure which one is worse, is the one that puts more effort on his brother, or the brother who puts his effort, more effort on the other one. So we can see that in terms of putting effort, more than what we require is also looked at as down, looked at down from the perspective of the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt salamullah alayhim. Especially when you know that one of your brothers, for example, his financials are very low. And you know that if you go to him or her and you want to visit them, they will have to go out of the way to do their duties as hosts. So they have to bring you food and sweets and drinks, and they don't have. So you, by going to them, you're actually putting more pressure on them than what they can handle. Unless you're taking your own sweets with you and giving them from your own, which is recommended, then that's good. Otherwise, sometimes we are not aware of other people's situations, and then we just go to them and we bother them and we burden them. We don't want people to burden us. We should not do this to our brothers either. Let us take a short break and then we will come back right after.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we were saying that we should not burden our brothers and our sisters in more what than they can handle. And the hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, he says, "من تكرمة الرجل لأخي أن يقبل تحفته ويتحفه بما عنده ولا تكلف له شيئا." He says, from the good traits, the general traits that a mu'min should have towards his akhi, towards his brother, is to become generous to him, to you, akhik, is that when he gives you something, you take it. And you also give him from what you have. But if you want to give him what you have, make sure you don't put taklufa, effort, and stress, and trouble on your own self just to give him something. And also the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said in the hadith, إِنِّي لَأَحَبُّ الْمُتَكَلِّفِينَ, I hate those who put too much emphasis on themselves to do things. Because sometimes, and this is also a problem that we have no time to discuss, is that we have what we call crowd pleasers or people pleasers. They do whatever they can just to please someone else. In terms of their looks, in terms of their houses, in terms of their food, in terms of their clothes, even in terms of talking. They be more nicer, more this and more everything just to please the other person. And sometimes those who we're trying to please don't deserve to be pleased. Sometimes they could be sinners. Sometimes they could be even, you know, non-Muslims. Do the requirement. Don't go overboard. Because the Prophet clearly said, I hate those who do put too much trouble and stress on themselves. إِنِّي لَأَحُبُّ الْمُتَكَلِّفِينَ. So this hadith, or this particular part of the dua of Imam Sajjad salamullah alayhi, it could mean us putting stress and trouble in ourselves in our day life when it concerns us. And sometimes no, when it concerns other people, we get involved in their business. And sometimes no, we go the extra mile to please someone else. In all these three cases, the Imam alayhi salam, he seeks refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from being in that position and does not want to put himself in harm's way. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد. آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم، عشق و تولای تو را.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.